Well, you're still with us. Thank you so very much. You must really enjoy stocks. Well, in our final presentation, we're going to show you some all-stars of investing, because I've always thought if you want to learn to do something well, steal from those or learn from those who have done it well in the past. And that doesn't guarantee that you're going to be a stock picker as good as Peter Lynch or Warren Buffett, but hey, you know, you're going to learn from them to the best. We're going to try to learn from them the best of our abilities. And of course, we spend a lot more time in this in the Introduction to Investments class. But Peter Lynch ran the Fidelity Magellan Mutual Fund from 1977 to 1990 and racked up 29% a year. I mean, just unbelievable. You know, no one's going to do that again. Maybe somebody will, but then he retired because he just said, I don't need this. I have plenty of money, and this is really stressful, because it is. And he wrote a book called One Up on Wall Street. Now, you're going to want to read it, folks. He wrote it while he was at the top of his game, and everyone thought, the critics were ready to jump on it and say, it's going to be some self-congratulatory piece of fluff. Nothing could be further from the truth. Mr. Lynch really knows how to break things down such that people who are just everyday average people can understand what he's explaining and how he did his investment research and the like. He says, buy what you know. You understand Nike because you wear their shoes, right? Or Adidas. Maybe they're companies that you can buy. Maybe not. Maybe they're not a good buy at the time. But he says, don't follow the latest nanotechnology, crypto, kleptocurrency, because you don't really understand it. Yes, and buy what you know. And some people jumped down his throat and said, well, it doesn't mean, just because the Nike, you know, it may not be a good value at the time. Well, he says that. He says, you know, it's just a starting point. And you understand the business, and maybe it's a good buy, maybe it's not. Warren Buffett says, don't buy a stock, buy a company. In other words, if you could buy Nike, if you had however many billions of dollars you had could scrounge together to run down to the New York Stock Exchange and buy Nike, the company, then go ahead and buy 10 stocks, you know, go buy 10 shares, right? Because he puts emphasis on the value of the entire company. So he really does want you to think of yourself as part owner of this company, which in reality you are, right? When you buy one share of FedEx, when that FedEx truck drives down the street, you can look at the left front tire and one lug nut is yours, right? That's how big these corporations are. But still, you are part owner. You're joining in the success or the failure of the company. Warren Buffett's teacher was Benjamin Graham, and we already made mention of the intelligent investor, and you want to read it eventually, but don't make it your first book to read. He was often called the father of value investing, and said, "Look, we just can't buy stocks because they're going up." He said that in the short term, the stock market is a voting machine, but in the long term, it's a weighing machine. So value is something we need to stress when we look at stocks. And then John Templeton, Sir John Templeton, by the way, pretty good for a kid from Tennessee, became a knight. He was one of the first mutual fund managers to go abroad to invest globally, and did very well for himself, thank you, and set up a foundation because he wanted to marry the material world, you know, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, with the spiritual world, render unto God that which is God. So he set up a foundation, and they try to marry the spiritual with capitalism, because, you know, they want to do their good works, whatever it's called, you know, what's it called, tithing and the stewardship and loaves and fishes and all that stuff. So it's pretty interesting. Check out his foundation, johntempleton.org, I think it is, or templeton.org. Bill Miller, poor Bill, but don't feel so sad for Bill Miller. But Bill Miller did something unprecedented. He ran the Legg Mason Value Trust for 15 calendar years in a row. He beat the S&P 500. Unprecedented record. He became, unfortunately for him, as far as I'm concerned, and in his opinion, the financial media's megastar. I mean, people were listening to every word he said. Can you imagine trying to do your job with a 10,000-watt spotlight on you? Well, what happened? He didn't beat the S&P 500 in 2006 and then did pretty poorly in 2007 and 8. Maybe Mr. Miller has lost his way. He then seemed to redeem himself in 2009, but then stunk up the joint in 2010-11, and they finally let him retire in 2012. I'm surprised they let him stay as long as they did, because it's a tough business. But still, he did very, very well for himself and for his investors for quite some time. And so don't feel too badly for Bill. I think he's come out of retirement. I think he's doing something with cryptocurrency. I'm not sure what he's doing, but check out Bill Miller. What do all these people have in common? They have courage to not follow the crowd, because the conventional wisdom is usually not very wise. And they have what I like to think of as a sixth sense, an eye for unrecognized value. Everyone sees this about a company, and they see, ooh, look at over here. Look at what everyone's missing. An eye for unrecognized value. Gary Kasparov was once asked why he and Anatoly Karpov were the two best chess players in the world. Now, this was back in the 1980s and 1990s, when one would win the world championship, and the next year the other one would win the world championship. And finally, Gary Kasparov became the undisputed champion and then was beaten by a computer. He now is one of Putin's biggest critics. His answer was astonishingly simple and direct. Why are we the two best chess players in the world? We attack better than anyone else, and we defend better than anybody else. Yeah, how can you argue with that? These investors bought the best companies, and they avoided the worst companies. Speaking of avoidance, as a mutual fund investor, I'm not looking to find the next Peter Lynch or the next Bill Miller. I'm looking to avoid the next Charles Stedman. And you may say, well, who was Charles Stedman? He ran his own mutual fund, the Stedman American Industry Fund. That's a bad sign, naming it after yourself, first of all. From December 1959 until his death in late 1997, and his cumulative total return was minus 42.9%. During one of the largest growth spurts of the global economy in the history of the world, up until that time, the largest, he lost 43% of his clients' money. He would have done much better simply placing his investors' funds into a savings account at a bank. He would have done better putting it under a mattress. I don't know, maybe he came from the life insurance industry. So you see, I want to find those people who have done consistently well, not necessarily been the absolute best, but I don't want to find people who are the worst. And so that's why we want to avoid people who have not done well. I want to find the people who have done well for consistently long periods of time. And not necessarily, as I said, the best. I had a client who just said it so well after I explained to him my investment philosophy and how I don't, you know, try to hit home runs or whatever, throw the Hail Mary pass if you want to use a sports analogy. And he said it so simply. He said, look, I don't have to win big. I just have to win. And I have taken that to heart. Think about it, folks. You don't have to be the next Peter Lynch, the next Bill Miller, the next Warren Buffett. You just have to be above average and do well consistently. And if the world doesn't end, you'll wind up fairly wealthy. But there are no guarantees. Warren Buffett says, be fearful when others are greedy. Be greedy when others are fearful. See, that's the contrarian that we talked about in him. His mentor, Benjamin Graham, said it this way. Buy when most people, including experts, are overly pessimistic, and sell when they are actively optimistic. I try to buy when others want to sell, and I try to sell when others want to buy. John Templeton said, bear markets are born of pessimism, grow on skepticism, mature on optimism, and die on euphoria. The time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. On a similar note, he also said, to buy when others are despondently selling and sell when others are avidly buying requires the greatest fortitude and pays the greatest reward. So, as the saying goes, you buy when there's blood in the streets. Now, did Sir John Templeton take his own advice? Oh, yes, he did. December 1941. You history buffs, what was going on in December 19th? Right, the United States was dragged into World War II. Japan attacked Pearl Harbor. You know, the United States was kind of itching for a fight and pushing the Japanese. And some people, it's a, you know, you can't go back in time and find out if it was really true, but it sure looks that way. Some people were saying they were using that as an excuse to get into World War II. And they figured the Japanese would attack Alaska or maybe the Philippines or something. The Japanese said, oh, no. We're going to hit you right at the heart of your Pacific fleet in Pearl Harbor. What did Sir John... He wasn't a knight yet. He told... Now, there's different versions of the story, so go to foundtempleton.org or something, whatever the name of the foundation is, and you'll get their version of the story. He told his broker to buy every stock on the New York Stock Exchange that were selling for less than a dollar. In other words, these are companies that are on the outs that are probably going to go bankrupt because we just got into a war. And would you have that kind of conviction, that kind of courage? I don't think I would. 4 years later, the war is over and John Templeton is a very wealthy man. Buy when there's blood in the streets. The time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. But it sure don't feel good. So, finally, we're going to hit you one last time. Because maybe probably hit you again. There's a future for you in the industry, folks. The commonly known position of stockbroker is actually legally called a registered representative. And there's another one called a registered investment advisor. They're very similar. We go by various names, stockbroker, financial representative, account executive, financial planner. I call myself a financial representative, stockbroker, whatever you want to call us. They're going to do a background check. They're going to make sure you have no shenanigans with other people's money. You must take the Series 7 and the 66, or the 63, depending on where you live. The 66 to 63, that's easy. It's a couple weeks of studying, 2 to 3 hours, you know, 1 hour or two a day for 2 to 3 weeks, you know, 4 weeks. The Series 7, though, is a very difficult test. It takes about 2 months of studying, about an hour or two a day. And I know people who have taken it, who have studied for 2 or 3 weeks, but that's all they did, 8 hours a day. I don't know if I could pull that one off. But it's a very difficult test. 3 hours in the morning, then you have an hour for lunch, and 3 hours in the afternoon. And then, boom, they tell you right away. It's all computerized, whether you made it or not. And many people do fail it the first time because they don't do what they're supposed to do. It's actually several tests. You don't see that. You just see one test. But there are several different categories, and you have to get 70% in all the categories. And a couple of the categories are pretty tricky, so people kind of blow them off thinking, you got to pass everyone. You must be sponsored by a brokerage firm, which makes it kind of difficult to get to become a broker because some brokerage firms are reticent to hire folks who have not passed the Series 7. So it's one of those chicken and the egg problems. But there's a new exam called the SIE, Securities Industry Essentials Exam. You don't need to be sponsored by a brokerage firm. You can take it. I think it's $60 or $80. Where the Series 7 is several hundred dollars. And usually your brokerage firm will pay that for you. Thank you very much. This one, there's several educational materials you can buy or rent or go to the library. But there's also a pre-test, a practice exam on the FINRA, Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, the folks who actually sponsor the brokers, that you can take for free. And Business 123, Introduction to Investments, forms the basis of all the material on that test, except for some other pieces of information that if you want to take it, talk to me or go look it up. We don't really delve into all the compliance issues, and also we don't spend a whole lot of time on initial public offerings and the like, which most people shouldn't get involved with anyway. But if you take Business 123, Introduction to Investments, you're basically learning the foundation of what it becomes, what you need to know to become a stockbroker. But there are many other positions in the industry, folks. There are dozens and dozens. You don't have to deal with people. You could be in the back office, insurance, banking, real estate finance. There's a future for you in this industry. It is huge. It is humongous. And there's a bunch of us old white guys that are about ready to retire or die. And did we mention that the salaries are higher than the national averages? And they need more women. They notice. They need more minorities. They need more bilingual, multilingual. They need veterans. Not because it's a touchy-feely, liberal thing to do. No, because if you have a brokerage firm in the South Bay here, in Chula Vista, you don't have somebody who speaks Spanish, you're losing business. If you're out in El Cajon and you don't have somebody who speaks Arabic, you're losing business. And throughout the county, if you don't have somebody who speaks Tagalog, you're losing business. The industry knows this. They know they need to be more diverse, and they're actively working. If you go to our investment club webpage, scroll down, you'll see all these recruiting websites, the job websites for all these, for brokerage firms, for mutual fund companies, for banks and for insurance companies and for real estate finance companies. Every single one of them is showing women, shows veterans, shows minorities. They know this. They know this. They're not stupid. Some people are a little intransigent, but this is business. And we don't want to lose business. Okay, enough said. And that, dear students, is our discussion of stocks. What's the bottom line? Stocks are the best long-term financial investment available. Leave the stock picking to the pros. In other words, find a good stock mutual fund, which, of course, we will cover in Chapter 14. As bullish as I might appear to be, and I am, my wife and I have 99% of our stock investments through high-quality mutual funds. I used to call it my Vegas fund, and it lived down to its name. Now I call it my Benjamin Graham fund, and it's where I get to buy and sell, mostly buy and not too often sell stocks. I believe it is simply unrealistic to think I can do better than professionals armed with an entire global research organization at their disposal, with people all around the world speaking dozens of languages. But I sure do love it when one of my stock picks does really well. It just feels so good. I just always assume that they're going to lose 50%. I just always assume that. And then when they do well, it's like, hey, hey, hey. So, bottom line, think long term. If you want to learn more about stocks and picking stocks, I strongly recommend that you take Business 123. I think I've mentioned this, Introduction to Investments, all online for free, unless you want to sign up and get college credit. And even that, you usually get your tuition waived, right? But in general, through your 401k, 403b, Roth IRAs, put the vast majority of your money into stock mutual funds, which we will cover in Chapter 14, after we've taken a look at bonds, boring bonds, stodgy bonds, reliable bonds in our next chapter. Thank you so much for being in our class, dear students. You are now official financial gurus for your friends, for your family, for your colleagues. It is a weighty responsibility.